Hi, this is Manton Reese.
And this is Daniel Jalka.
And this is Core Intuition, featuring two developers talking about bug and baby tracking.
Hi, the talk show. This is Daniel Jalka and Manton Reese, and you guys suck!
Yeah, I thought about doing some kind of prank call on their new voicemail thing. Did you have a chance to do that?
I haven't called. I'm afraid. You know what's ironic is I'm afraid to call because.
So my idea was to call and say, you know, your ad agency, you know, told us to call this number. You know, we want to place an ad. You know, we try to figure out who to talk to, and I don't know, something along those lines. But
yeah, it's much easier to instead of having to commit to recording one's voice on an answering machine in San Francisco, mm-hmm. It's much easier just to record an entire podcast talking about how you are afraid to call a voice call in line.
Should we have a voice call in line though? Should we have like, we get good feedback emails where people, you know, say, you know, interesting things about the show or ask questions, but we don't read them on air or anything like that. Is that something we're missing?
I think maybe we should aim a little lower first by having like a blog and a logo.
Yeah. And, okay. Ouch.
And if we really want to race to the bottom of technology, like the talk show is, then maybe we could sponsor a listener like mail-in letter kind of arrangement.
There you go.
Because. You know, I think that they're trying to be sort of retro with this telephone thingamajig, but I think we could probably beat them there if we either switch to mail-in letters or maybe we could have a listener telegraph line.
Oh, I like it. And we could just play the little clicks on the air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, you know, we really want to hear from all of you out there, but it would be really inconvenient for us if you just emailed us or even sent us a recorded MP3 of your voice. So we want to make sure to put as many obstructions in the way as possible.
And one of the ironic things about the voicemail thing is, you know, I know both Dan and John, you know, they have really nice mics and they spend a lot of time on recording. But then when they play the voicemail on the air, it's going to be, you know, a really bad recording from some, you know, telephone line.
From some assholes like us. Oops, there goes our clean tag.
Going to get revoked. Apple will do the same thing they're doing with the App Store. They will take our podcast out of the listing.
I think what happened is if I'm thinking about John Gruber, then profanity will come out of my mouth.
Isn't that funny, though, how you have different friends who have different personalities, and when you're around one of them, you sort of adapt to, at least I do, you know, you adapt to sort of their personality or their language.
Right, yeah, it's like dialects, and if you hang out in... I don't know. In Austin, you get a little Texas accent down there?
Yeah, a little bit, I guess. Although I think most of Austin is... Well, the people living in Austin now were not actually born here.
Right.
They seem to all come from somewhere else.
Sort of a colony. If I go to England or something, I'll start talking with a little bit more enunciation, maybe. I think if you hang out with John Gruber or if you listen to his podcast, although Dan keeps him pretty clean.
Mm-hmm.
So
they beep it pretty well. Yeah. I think there's only been like one episode where they had to do that.
Yeah, but he definitely puts you in the mood for swearing, and I realize that could sound like that I don't like him or something, but the truth is, you know, I like swearing at John Gruber.
Right. Well, you mentioned one thing that I want to get back to, actually, which is the logo and the website and the lack of the blog. You know, we really put this together really quickly, and we still don't have these basic things that we need. I was planning on doing sort of a real logo, but I haven't had time. Do we want to open that up to listeners? Do we want to get other artists involved and try to kickstart that?
Before we do that, we need to ask all of the crappy artists in the audience to turn down their headphones for a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Because we actually don't want crappy submissions.
Only the best.
Only the best, meaning please... copy and paste an Apple logo and call it our podcast logo.
Hey, for the record, we have not been sued.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I know. I think what's helping us out is that we did put out, probably many listeners don't know, but we did put out an NDA for anybody listening, which says that you are not allowed to disclose to Apple Computer or its lawyers that we are using a Core logo.
Right. And I also filter on the server anything coming from Apple Campus IP.
Right. And so just so everybody knows, that NDA has not been lifted. We're going to continue to keep Apple in the dark about this logo.
Yet another perpetual NDA. That's all we need.
That's right. Two can play at this game. Speaking of NDAs, I have been spending a lot of time the past few weeks. You know, I'm expecting, my wife and I are expecting a baby really soon. And so, of course, I've been preparing for that. But also, I got Mars Edit 2.2 out, and it was important to me to get that out with a few weeks to buffer, because, you know, never know when you release an app if the walls are going to start crumbling down. So I got that out there, and now I've been sort of working a lot on the iPhone stuff.
Great.
And so I'm really starting to appreciate this freaking NDA banter that's going on the Twitters and on the blogs. It's been fun, nonetheless. I am a little bit annoyed at the fact that I can't consult with my friends and colleagues as much as I might about, you know, technical difficulties with programming for the phone platform. It's been fun to make some progress, and I sort of feel like now that I don't know how much time I'm going to have before the baby gets here, I sort of need to invest some time in projects with uncertain release dates.
So this is not something that's going to be wrapped up in the next week.
No.
Yeah.
And I would frankly be afraid to release something, you know, in this uncertain time.
Doing support email from the hospital, that does not sound like a good idea.
No. There'll be a different type of support going on there, and it won't involve my customers, I hope. So one of the things I've been pleased with as I'm sort of juggling so many things in my developer personal life is the growing dependency, the positive dependency I have on my bug tracking database.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I've been using FogBugs. Maybe I didn't tell you, but I've been using there's sort of this worst kept secret that if you're a one man, or I think even a two man shop, or I think they even allow women to use it, you can use FogBugs for free. So I'm using a hosted FogBugs, and I'm pretty happy with it. I sort of started off maybe keeping only a small fraction of all of my open issues in there, and because I migrated from the age old trusted technique of one text file per project.
Yeah.
And
I was worried you were going to say like Excel spreadsheet or something.
Oh no,
that was going to scare me.
No, nothing even that structured. But I do have a fairly advanced text file format, which actually is pretty well suited to that software from Jesse Grosjean, the task paper.
Yeah.
But to be honest, it's much better to get this stuff into a real database. So I do all my support email now, and also my bugs with FogBugs, and that's been working pretty well for me. What are you using for your indie projects? I think you might use FogBugs for something professional, right?
Yeah, so at VitalSource, we've used FogBugs for a few years, and actually just a couple months ago switched to Jira.
Uh-huh.
From FogBugs. FogBugs, we were on an old version. It was not the hosted version. It was like the version you install yourself.
Right.
And in fact, this was, I guess, 3 or 4 years ago when we started. It only ran on Windows back then. And we actually had a Windows box. Everything else was Xservs. We had a Windows box just to run FogBugs.
Wow.
Because it really was the best solution out there.
Yeah.
And then finally, you know, they let you install on Mac OS X. So we used that. And it started bogging down, and I actually, the new versions, I felt like were kind of going a little bit backwards in terms of the UI.
Really?
Getting a little more clunky. I don't know. I sort of fell out of love with it, and at the same time, I sort of didn't really like it that much anymore. Other powers were at work, and Jira sort of came online, so.
Cool.
That's been interesting. Jira is kind of bizarre. It's, by default, the UI is way too messy. There's way too many things going on. I knew I was in trouble when there was like a link to download a Word file version of the bug.
Whoa, that is bizarre. That's like I need to mail my manager this bug or something.
Exactly. That really scared me, and I clicked on it, and of course it didn't actually work. So that was just, I don't know, even more ironic. But It's very customizable. I'll give it that. Like, you can go per project and say, like, I don't care about certain fields. Don't even show them you know, when you're adding a bug. But I think that the UI is definitely more cluttered than FogBugs.
Yeah.
FogBugs seem to always get that right about just ask for the basics.
Yeah, it's maybe simple to a fault, but I do appreciate that it's pretty easy to get my head around all the features it has. Something I think it would really benefit from is just, I mean, in this era of tagging, I think that any of these types of projects, project management or bug management stuff, I think would benefit from just a generic tags field. Like,
yep.
It would be great if I could just put tags in and then I would be able to filter by tags and be able to, because there's things where what I want to do with an issue doesn't exactly fit the model. Examples of things like this are, it would be great if I could add like a notify colon Manton tag, and then I would know, like, whenever I close a bug, I could say, or whenever I release a release, I could say, okay, what bugs did I close in this release that have notify tags? And then I would know, oh, I should let Manton know that I finally fixed that bug. These are just like kind of examples that I really don't think they should clutter up the actual interface of the system with features for this, but tags are really nice in that they make it pretty easy to extend functionality in a custom way.
That actually brings me to the real question you asked, which is for indie stuff, I use HiRISE from 37 Signals.
Oh, okay.
And that does have tags, which I use very kind of in the same way you just talked about. So I'll do things like I'll tag customers like with beta or things like that, so I can go and I can quickly say, okay, who needs the new beta or who do I need to respond to? But it's not a bug tracking system, right? It's a customer management kind of system.
Right.
And so the way I use it is if I get a support email that doesn't need that I know is going to be like a couple back and forth emails or something I need to follow up on later, I forward it to HiRISE. So by default, nothing goes to HiRISE. It comes to my inbox, but I forward it. There's a special like Dropbox at HiRISE email account. I forward it to that, and then it shows up. And HiRISE is smart enough to automatically take the from address and make a contact out of it, with the email address and anything else that it sees. So once it's in there, I can have tasks that are customer specific. So I say, like, I need to send this person a new version, or I need to test their preference file or something, and get back to them.
Right.
And that actually works pretty well. But it's not a bug database, right? It's only for sort of customer specific tasks.
How would you prevent yourself from losing track of an open commitment to a customer?
I would forward the email. If I had an email, I'd forward it to HiRISE. And then in HiRISE, I would click on the email and I would add a task. And so the task is then associated with the email and the customer. And then it just shows up in the HiRISE tasks list.
Okay, so it is sort of a to-do list.
Yeah.
That's interesting, yeah.
It is, but I purposely keep it short. I only keep customer tasks in there.
Right.
Mostly. And so I think right now my task list in HiRISE is only maybe it's like 5-10 items.
Uh-huh.
It's not just customers. There's some other stuff in there. But I keep it short so that like when I log into HiRISE, I see everything.
Right.
It's not like hundreds of to-do items. And then I use, right now I'm using Task Paper, which you mentioned, for everything else, for brainstorming, for planning features. So I have a document where I have different sections in the document for different versions out, and just anytime I think of something or any bug I find that isn't customer specific, I'll just throw it in there.
Right. Yeah. I, as much as I like the idea of Task Paper, I've ended up not really getting totally into using it. Maybe because I've sort of defaulted instead to using the FogBugs for all of my projects. I use FogBugs. I'm sort of in between for how to handle personal to-dos, and I actually tend towards good old-fashioned, notepad paper for a lot of that stuff. It's just like I actually have a stack of paper next to my desk at my computer, and I tend to trust, a lot of this to-do list stuff is about what do you trust yourself to actually pay attention to later. So I, for the stuff that's like day-to-day and sort of as soon as possible to-dos, I end up using the paper because I can't lose the paper in the jumble of my electronic computer world. So that's sort of ends up working for me. But
yeah,
you know, it's interesting. You said you switched from Fogbugs to Jira because I know that Gus Mueller from Flying Meat was a big Jira fan, and he ended up switching from Jira to Fogbugs. So
yeah,
I guess there's just depending on what you're looking for and what is bugging you most about any particular system.
Yeah, and like I said, there was sort of politics involved in this too. This
wasn't my
decision. And part of my reason, like for the indie stuff, I use HiRISE and TaskPaper exclusively. And so listeners will realize that there's not a formal bug system in either of those, right? And I think I was just burned out on bug tracking systems. And I wanted something just really, really simple where I could keep track of customer issues, which I have to, you know, I can't lose. I don't want to let anything slip through the cracks and not respond to a customer. But at the same time, I didn't want to manage a database of hundreds of bugs, which I may or may not get to. So I don't know. I sort of, there was a backlash, I think, against like formal bug databases in my choice, but so far it's working.
Cool.
I'm curious, do you track features in addition to bugs, or do you track features, feature requests in Fogbugs too? And how do you handle that?
I do. I basically, if a feature request comes in and I agree with it, that it belongs in, at least in the brainstorming for a future product, then I'll sort of try to guess what release it might go for. I have a bunch of future release numbers in Fogbugs that are just sort of buckets, right, for where something might end up. And if it's something that's just not going to happen, it's, you know, just really not the style or my style of how an app should behave, then I'll just close it. It's, you know, a lot of times people suggest things that might even be long shots, but I still think there's a germ of an idea there that I should try to at least take inspiration from, you know, maybe the customer will suggest a specific feature that I don't really agree with a specific feature, but I agree with maybe the app having a mechanism that would. That's generally what I try to do, is I try to take a specific feature request and turn it into a more broad capability request. So
yeah,
kind of a classic example is with Mars Edit, a lot of people have specific requests about things that they wish the application would do, particularly like as it's publishing or after it's publishing. So examples include people who would like to convert all the Markdown into HTML, for instance, if they're using John Gruber's Markdown. And or they want to send a tweet to Twitter when they publish a blog post, and these types of things I consider them to be all variants of the feature, you know, run a custom script after you publish. So I have this. So I would take feedback like that and just sort of pile it onto a big feature bug, which is you know, add this ability for custom actions. And then I list all the examples of ways that might be used. And in general, I try to keep an open issue for every feature, although I do sort of have still I still sort of resort back to the text file-based planning in my projects. I have still have a to-do file, and that's where I sort of just map out the general high-level plans, or if I just want to have like a big reminder, like try to do this soon, or something like that. Some things don't end up in Fogbugs, but for the most part, I can look at Fogbugs and have it be a pretty good planning tool.
Yeah, it sounds like you do a good job of taking things and putting them in the right place in Fogbugs. So you don't have 10 or 20 separate feature requests that all are variations on this idea, but you say, okay, this is the same idea, and you add a comment or whatever to an existing feature.
Right.
Because I think one of the traps you can get into with bug systems is just have hundreds of features.
Right.
That, you know, 2 years later, you're going to go back and like, oh, guess what? You know, case number 10 is still, you know, we still haven't done
right.
that. And you know what? We're never going to do it. 37 Signals has actually posted this about this a little bit on their blog about not obsessing about tracking every single feature, because you're going to hear from your customers for the things that really need to be done.
Yes.
You know, every day, every week, you're going to hear.
Yeah, you'll hear repeatedly, right?
Yeah, exactly. You'll hear the same things over and over, and you'll know, okay, this is actually a priority. Versus you get one request from a customer that sounds great, but then you never hear anything from any other customer again that's the same thing, yet it's taking a place in the bug system.
Right.
I don't know. I think part of that reasoning is what kind of led me to just not have a formal way of keeping track of features other than task paper, which I look at a lot less. I don't know. It's more of a brainstorming sort of keeping track of notes and ideas, but not necessarily, okay, the next version is going to have all of these things. It's just, it's a place to just kind of keep track of things. And then, as I'm working on releases, I'll go through and sometimes I'll just delete some notes that I know are just not relevant anymore.
Right. You know, speaking of bug tracking software, it does a really good job of keeping track of what you want to, or what, you know, what you sort of have ambitions and want to do with your products. But of course, there's no system out there that I know of to actually keep you motivated and passionate about doing the work. You know, Fogbugs is, and any of these bug tracking systems are pretty cool because you can always sort of get a picture of what is out there and needs to be done. But I wonder if there are any tricks you can share, Manton, about how to stay motivated and stay sort of jazzed about working. I work at home alone, so it can be sort of I think it helps a lot to have things like IRC and Twitter and chat and podcasts with Manton Reese, but it's sort of not the same thing as working in a sort of charged, you know, group environment. And I think you probably even relate to this in your day job because you work from home. So
yeah, you need things that will inspire you and sort of keep you energized on something. And also one of the things that helps me is just working on different projects, so not getting bogged down or bored on any one thing. Which is, it's a good thing and a bad thing. I'm easily distracted. So even last week I started working on something completely new when I should have been working on bug fixes on something.
I saw that on your Twitter. That reminds me, I need to try to grill you about your product again and get a new exciting piece of information out of you.
Oh, boy. I was hoping we would go the whole show without you remembering to do that.
So let us review, ladies and gentlemen. We know this is a Mac application. What else do we know about it?
I think I revealed that there was blue in the icon.
Oh, and we know that it's blue in the icon, and we also know that it is a competitor to Mars Edit.
No, it's definitely not a competitor to Mars Edit, thankfully. That would make for some really interesting shows, though, if we had competing products had feature parity.
Yeah,
great.
I'm going to make a note to write a Wii. I don't know. Like maybe I'll call it like Wii Teleport or something.
Hey, that's not a bad name.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had mentioned these vague things about it being enabled by a new device or web service, and I don't know. This whole thing is a little bit bizarre because, I mean, one of the things that you try to do is not talk about unannounced products, and here I'm going on and on about something, even in vague terms. And I feel like the more I do this, the more vaporware it becomes. Like, what if I don't actually ship, you know, this product?
are you going to talk it out of existence?
It could be. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. I'll say this is a big thing. This is a big hint. This may be too big of a hint, but it's something about movies. I'll say it's something about movies.
So you're going into show business.
This is the last episode of Core Edition. I'm moving to LA.
Well, that's good. So we got to figure out, though, how to keep you motivated and working on this application instead of working on this new... Now, he's just compounding the mysteries here by alluding to a third application, which we also know nothing about.
Yeah, well, I actually was thinking about posting my blog about the third app because it's kind of a small little thing, and I don't know what I'm going to do with it. It's something I actually wrote last year. I mean, I think all developers, or a lot of developers, they have a couple little projects kind of on the side or things they experiment with. Mm-hmm. Ideas are cheap, but, you know, sometimes you'll have an idea and you think you can solve it in a unique way. And so you'll do that. And so over the last couple of years, I've had a couple projects like that have gotten to the point where I actually have like a Subversion repository for them. And I've spent, you know, more than just like one weekend on them. But they, for one reason or another, they're not at the point where they're actual products.
Yeah.
They haven't convinced me that they need to be out there. And this was one of those last year, and I shelved it and said, okay, I'm not going to do this now. And then last week I was on vacation. Actually, I took a week off, spent time with family, and I was going to spend a couple, you know, moments when I had free time working on finishing other things that I should finish. But instead I had this idea to sort of rewrite this old app, and it was one of those things that I just had a lot of fun with. And so I didn't know where it was going to go, but
yeah,
I spent some time on it.
Well, that's appropriate for vacation. I mean, sometimes it's exactly what you need on vacation, is to work on something that you are not sort of requiring yourself to work on. Right.
Right. Exactly. But yeah, again, I mean, that just distracts from things that I really need to be working on. I've spent a lot of time the last few weeks on finishing up the new version of WeTransfer, which has been like, oh man, it's bordering on a year, I think, in development. It's crazy. It's something I should have shipped 6 months ago, and just keeps dragging on. So I think at some point when things drag on like that, it's not a good idea, but I tend to be distracted, and I sort of work on something small that I can see immediate mm-hmm. results yeah. and say, okay, I did this, and then I kind of get refreshed and I go back to the old problem and I see it in a new way, and then I can actually finish it up.
As I said earlier, we're expecting our first baby here, and due date is about a week from now. I have been sort of trying to put my house in order, so to speak, as far as my real house goes and as far as my projects go, and Red Sweater and support and all that. And I'm sort of, as any new parent, I guess, I'm not sure how much work it's going to be, how much time I'm going to need. I wonder if I'm being crazy, but I am planning on, you know, taking a substantial break from the day-to-day programming work and all that. But I haven't really planned anything unusual as far as support and all that goes. I think I'm going to try to just sort of carve out a few minutes a day to answer support emails and all that. What do you think? Am I crazy?
I think that's right. And even like, I was on vacation last week, and we went out to the lake and had a cabin that had no Wi-Fi. But I just spent a few minutes a day on edge dealing with any like critical emails or support that came in.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what your support load is. For me, last week it was easy to manage. I only had a few things to deal with, but it seems reasonable to definitely stop programming at least for the first couple of weeks, I think. Depending on how, you know, I mean, the thing is, every baby is a little bit different, has different needs. Some, if you're lucky, will sleep all day long. And if you're not lucky, you know, then you're not going to be sleeping much. And, even carving out 10 minutes is going to be like a real luxury, but you know, you want to stay optimistic and say, okay, I can deal with support at least a little bit every day.
Right.
Or every other day at the worst.
I mean, realistically, if there were only 23 hours in the day, then the baby would have to get taken care of in 23 hours. So I guess when it comes down to it, you know, I could probably make it work. It's just a question of whether it's unrealistic or not, mm-hmm. I guess. I guess I'm sort of counting on the fact that, you know, I don't want to put too much extra workload on my wife, but
yeah.
I guess I'm sort of counting on the fact that if there's one of us that can get away from it for a few minutes a day, it's probably me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, gotta keep the customers happy so I can, you know, afford the baby shoes, so to speak.
Yeah, if I was doing this again, I would probably carve out a specific time of the day, not exactly, but just like in the evening or in the morning, I'm gonna spend this time,
right.
And you know, make sure your wife is on board with that, and just take care of it, and you know, hopefully, you know, things will be such that you'll be able to sleep enough the other times, and you know, have enough time to make the baby happy.
Yeah, we heard the advice that sounds good, to always at the beginning always sleep when the baby sleeps.
Absolutely. It's the kind of thing, you know, everyone says that to you, you know, parents will say that to you, and you kind of nod your head and yeah, that sounds like a good idea. But then when the time comes, oh, the baby's asleep, I can work on, you know, Mars Edit for iPhone or, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
right. You've got to resist that temptation because it's always a bad idea.
All right. I'm worried because I'm not a napper. I have a very hard time sleeping, except actually I really only sleep, generally speaking, after I'm quite tired. So
right.
As I understand it, being quite tired will not be a problem in this situation.
Probably not.
Hopefully, you know, I'll be able to take advantage of napping for really the first time in my life. But
yeah, this is funny though, because like, I mean, I'm thinking back, you know, my Actually, as we record this today, my girls are, they're twins. They're 8 years old today. That's their birthday.
Oh, right. Happy birthday to them.
Well, thank you. And so,
hey, wait a minute. Isn't it Obama's birthday as well?
You know, I heard that on the radio this morning.
And to think they supported Hillary.
They were kind of on the fence, actually. It was pretty amusing because they would come home from school. You know, they were only in second grade, but they'd come home with stories. And they don't understand politics, but they understand, like, who their friends' parents support.
Right. Yeah, okay.
But, so I'm thinking back, you know, and we were completely sleep-deprived. And I don't actually remember much at all of the first, like, few months. And, you know, luckily I don't think I had that much going on. Actually, I had just switched sort of jobs shortly after they were born. And I didn't have that much going on, but I'm thinking with, you know, running your own business and, you know, not having any other coders to look over your shoulder. Like, if you're really just sleep deprived and you're working on something and you don't remember, like, what you did, is that going to be a problem later? And did I implement that feature?
Do I need to turn off subversion access for myself?
Or at least look at the logs frequently to make sure that your other self that was sleep deprived knows, you know, what you checked in.
Right, and I need to make sure I don't start adding, like, crazy parent features, right? Like, oh, yeah, you know, Mars Edit really needs a feature for where babies could, you know, bang on the keyboard and
Black Ink needs, like, a baby version that has, like, really short words.
Right, right. You know, featured in Mars Edit 3, whenever you, as you're typing, little sounds of my child will come out of your speakers. Won't that be pleasant?
Yeah. Well, that's what Easter eggs are for, right? If you hold down Command, Option, Shift, Control, and then type baby, like, something happens with a picture of something.
Okay, well, it's a brave new world awaiting me, and I think it'll. You know, you said you don't know how much my support load is. It's really not that bad. I think it can probably be boiled down to less than a half hour per day at this point. So,
okay.
Pretty enviably small support load, really, when all is considered.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'll just have to. The big question is going to be, of course. How successful we will be at getting these podcasts out.
Right.
Maybe a little slow at the beginning, at least.
That's okay. I mean, we seem to be going, we sort of seem to be falling into every couple weeks anyway.
Yeah.
So we'll just see how it goes. And if I don't hear from you, you know, after a couple months, then.
If you don't hear from me, it probably means I found a new podcast partner.
Mm-hmm.
And right. Don't take that personally or anything. It's just, you know, I just think that my 4-week-old baby might be a better podcast partner than you.
Well, it would definitely be more entertaining.
Now I'm falling into that terrible habit that the talk show uses of false animosity.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate that. So I love you, man.
All right. I love you too, but I'm going to set up a filter in iTunes for any mentions of your name just in case, you know, you start something new.
Oh, right. Good. Yeah, good idea. It's always good to trust but verify.
All right. Well, it was good talking to you this week.
You too. Catch you later.
All right. Good luck.
Thanks.